From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So with The Media Project, you have an opportunity to get a half hour of commentary and analysis on the media issues of the week. And some days we even give you some thoughtful insight. I'm Rex Smith, editor of The Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, who was off last week. So I'm sure you all have been missing his voice. Speak, Alan.
You have a way with words, Rex.
Thank you.
That's great.
And also, here is Barbara Lombardo, the longtime former editor of the Saratogian. Are you doing okay?
I was doing okay until just now.
And Judy Patrick.
I'm optimistic about the insight.
There we go. Judy Patrick, vice president of the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady.
Glad to be here. Let's go.
Let's talk about it. There's a lot to talk about, isn't there? But let's just start off by saying in New York State, where some of the listeners of WAMC reside, the state legislature has agreed to, it's just a terrible proposal that came from Governor Cuomo. This is my estimation and that of our editorial board, which would essentially allow secret arrests in New York State, allow the discretion resting with a judge as to whether to release mugshots and information about anyone being arrested. Initially, the decision would be up to the police department as to whether they release stuff. As an industry that depends upon freedom of information, I can't imagine why this isn't just a terrible idea.
It really scares the heck out of me, and I don't understand what the rationale for that is at all. We should be doing the opposite.
Well, what scares you so much?
It scares me that they can make arrests and the public can be ignorant about it, not told about it.
Yeah. The other side of this one, of course, is, and I'm sure that this is what the argument will be, is that since the preponderance of people in the criminal justice system is often of color, that it becomes a racist thing every time you show this these images. I agree with the panel that this is a terrible thing and that the ability of people to see all of this is terribly important in an open society. Nevertheless, that's what I think is going on.
I suggest that the racism will work the other way, that the typical arrests that they will release will be those of poor citizens, more typically people of color, and those that they will, because police will have the discretion, those that they will decide to hold back are, well, you know, he's a responsible citizen who's paid his bail, and they will hold back the stuff of people with clout in society and let us know eventually about the people of color.
Well, you know, Rex, you make a very good point.
When the information was more public than it has been in recent years, newspapers would still wrestle with how much do you publish about arrests. And I think the smaller the news outlet, the more community-oriented the newspaper, you would tend to publish arrests that maybe were of lesser significance. A DWI in Saratoga Springs might get published, but a DWI at the Times Union might not get published. And it even extends to, you know, a killing in New York City doesn't get published, but a murder or killing in Albany and Saratoga, of course, would be published.
Who now they're targeting, I think, is these websites that put up mugshots and publicize. These are for-profit enterprises, and if you want to have your mugshot taken down, they will charge you a fee. So there's a way to target that. I mean, it's despicable. It really is, I think. And there is a way to target that, and that is to do what California has done, which is more thoughtful legislation, which makes it illegal to charge a fee for removing something from the digital presence. And that would remove the profit incentive to just willy-nilly publish every mugshot you can find and restore some measure of editorial judgment over this kind of stuff.
You know, I think we're sitting here all stunned that this is actually going to be adopted and enacted in New York State because it's a step towards a closed court system, and court systems need to be open so the public knows that justice is being done. It's to the benefit of defendants as well for the public to be aware of what they're charged with and whether or not they're getting justice or not. I can see, you know, prominent businessmen, if they get arrested, we're not going to get that information. That happens, you know, too often in small towns anyway. But this is a horrendous move, and newspapers across the state, when they first heard about this, objected to it. You know, I can hear the average Joe would say, well, people are innocent until they're proven guilty. But being arrested is part of the process, and getting that information out, being public about it, is an important part of our open judicial system.
Well, there are those who would make the argument, I think in other countries particularly, that, you know, there's a presumption of guilt when you put these mugshots up. So that, you know, I think that that's one argument against. And I'm fascinated by Barbara's very interesting concept of the size of the paper is whether or not, because the Berkshire Eagle, if you got a DWI in Berkshire County, you're going to be in the paper. You'll be in the paper. The Times Union, not so much, right?
Right, not unless it's somebody of
distinction.
Yeah, the thing, unless, yeah, you use an editorial judgment. So it does make a difference the bigger the paper. And when my predecessor, Jeff Cohen, used to be the editor of the Times Union, he went down to Houston, Texas to be the editor of the Houston Chronicle. And his first week there, there was a triple homicide in Houston, and he wanted to put it on the front page. And the other editors working with him said, you shouldn't do that because this kind of thing happens. He said, oh, no, man, triple homicide. This has got to be really newsworthy. And so he put it on the front page, and the next day there was another triple homicide. And, of course, a triple homicide here would be huge news for weeks, but it just depends upon your scope. But, you know, this notion of secret arrest, you're right, it does happen in other countries. We've just this past week had this example of Conor McGregor, the mixed martial arts artist, a big guy. He made $99 million last
year.
And now he's been identified as a rape suspect. But apparently this happened back in January or something. But laws in Ireland restrict the news media from identifying individuals charged with rape unless they are convicted. And so you could have, and consider this in New York State, if this law is implemented, you could have somebody accused of a crime, having been accused of rape, but we wouldn't know about it because the arrest record would not be available to
us. And that would play into the hands of all these Me Too guys, prominent movie producers and others, who would never have been identified.
Alan, you asked the governor about this back in January when it was a fresh new proposal.
I remember.
Yeah, he kind of dodged it. He said, well, if you have a better idea, let me know. So we've just offered a better idea, but this has been hatched and agreed to in the secret budget deliberations, the two men and a woman in a room now, you know, the legislative leaders and the governor, and it is printed in a bill. And if the legislators don't pass a budget by the start of the fiscal year, they will lose their $10,000 pay raise.
Oh, that doesn't matter, Rex. They
no,
say.
No.
Of course it matters, and it's the one thing that is really motivating them rather than doing right.
You know, I just want to go on record as saying three people in the room, I don't care that one of them's a woman, I still don't like three people in a room deciding everything.
Hear, hear.
Oh. Okay, well, so keep an eye out for that despicable legislation.
And keep your eye out for no information about arrests. It's all a big secret now.
Yeah, what a great thing. We have a reader, Jermaine, wrote to us about our previous conversation about reporting on shooters. And she writes, too much energy is placed on making sick people notorious. Case in point, I know more about Adolf Hitler's life and family than my family or the people he annihilated, thanks to the programs who need ratings. So how we report mentally ill killers needs to be just the brief facts. Too many facts leads to pontification for the killer and disregard for the lives that were taken.
Well, I got problems with the letter. One problem, I think, is that Adolf Hitler destroyed the world. You know, that's a pretty bad example of who you shouldn't cover with. In fact, I understand, I hope I'm right, that any book about Hitler outsells almost everything else. Because people are fascinated about how a madman, get this now, there's an analogy here, how a madman can get to be the head of a major government while some people don't even...
I know what you're saying, Alan.
Do you? Okay.
How can this be? Yeah, I wrote a column about anger playing out in American society and in our political system last week, and had the opportunity to report that the president of the United States is certainly mad. Very mad.
Well, it's
so
true.
Yeah, there you go. And that is all true. What about this, though? Let's go to the issue in which the president has been very much in the news, and that is the report that William Barr, the attorney general, has sent to Congress purporting to summarize the Mueller investigation, 4 pages. And as a result of what we know about it, journalism is being called into question. And supposedly there is a day of reckoning because of questions about how the 2-year investigation looking into allegations of collusion involving the president and the 2016 election, how the media handled it. So was the coverage fair? Was it too much? Ought there to be a moment of reckoning?
It wasn't enough, to be perfectly honest with you. And let me just say, we were talking about Hitler a few minutes ago. And of course, he had Goebbels, and Goebbels was a practitioner of what we would call the big lie. You say something over and over and over again. First of all, they won't release the report. Oh, says Trump, it's okay with me, but my hand-picked, subservient, slavishly subservient attorney general won't release the report. That's on him, not on me. And you know what? People believe that garbage. That's what's so terrible, you know, about this. So there's facts, and then there's the repetition again and again and again of the big lie.
I would add that Washington Post media columnist Margaret Sullivan, who I can give a plug to Judy's organization, is having her as a speaker at next week, right? Mm-hmm. New York Press Association seminars, which are always excellent. But she was quoted the other day as saying that the press should not be bullied by these people that say, well, by the president and his followers who think that we've done the wrong thing or did too much. There was, depending on which news outlets you watched, you know, maybe there was anticipation of what would happen and maybe some disappointment that wasn't masked very well. I would probably agree with that. But the president has not been exonerated. He's not been vindicated. And the press should not be bullied.
Hence the big lie.
You know, I think we do a good job in the industry of beating ourselves up unnecessarily. Because if you look at the mainstream press and what they reported, they were very careful about this. And actually, the New York Times, Eric Wimple of the Washington Post, another media columnist, they have a lot of them, wrote a column right after the Barr letter was issued, noting that the New York Times wrote a story shortly before the election in 2016, quoting the FBI, saying there did not appear to be a clear link between the Russian meddling in the election and the President Trump himself. I mean, that has always been open. If you listen carefully to what the press was reporting, read it carefully, you'll see that nobody was saying that. We were covering tons of really interesting stories that needed to be covered. And careful readers, careful listeners, paying attention, no reputable journalists went that far.
Right. I feel as though the reporters were doing their job. They were really reporting on the issues that were unfolding in courtrooms across the country. What is untruthful, of course, is the way the president is characterizing this, that it's a slam dunk exoneration.
That's the big lie.
Which, of course, exactly, which is not true. And let's bear in mind that the Mueller report led to the conviction of the chairman of the president's campaign committee, to the indictment of the national security advisor, to the conviction of the president's personal lawyer. In fact, 27 indictments. So there has been a lot of fallout about corruption, and there are a lot of questions that have been raised by this that we wouldn't know about if there weren't this investigation. What we don't know is all that Mueller might have found about such questions as what income flowed to the Trump organization as a result of people trying to curry favor with the president by staying in the Trump Hotel in D.C. and that sort of thing. That's why we really ought to see the report. But I know that just saying this as a journalist is going to prompt a lot of people who are advocates for the president to say, there you go again, being biased against our leader.
Well, it's just so extraordinary to me that anybody can say that. You know, this president who says we all have to be more civil to each other, he gets up there, he starts talking about Adam Schiff's pencil-like neck and the kinds of things he does. You know, I have to tell you, when I see him doing that stuff, maybe it's because I'm a lot older than you guys are, I have reference to the Nuremberg crowds who are out there screaming about Hitler.
But I think when you do that, I think that's when the right can say, see, they are over-exaggerating this. And when you make the comparisons to the Hitler regime, some people may interpret that as going
but
too
Judy,
far.
But Judy, did you hear the president's remarks at his rally? It felt like listening to Hitler. And I, full disclosure, I'm a Jewish kid from Brooklyn. Always wondered whether there could be anti-Semitism in the country that I was born and grew up in. And he sounds like Hitler, and the people cheering him scare me. And I think we need to keep reporting over and over again that the report did not exonerate him. We need to call out his lies, and we need to call out the members of Congress that are backing up his lies and trying to never let that report be made public.
But you see the difficulty here. I had an interesting conversation this week with a lawyer for the New York Times who came to Albany Law School, who talked about the point that if a journalist is in a position of believing that there is a peril to our democracy, or actually just uncovering from reporting the depth of lies and so on, how do you not report about that thoroughly and aggressively, as you're suggesting, without seeming to be biased? How do you not then exacerbate the campaign sloganeering that the media is out to get him?
And as the enemy of the people.
And as the enemy of the people. It's a really difficult situation. It's wonderfully clever on the part of Donald Trump.
I wouldn't say wonderful. I would say diabolically.
Yes. Well, that's
better. Well, part of it is our choice. This sounds simple, but it is our choice of phrases, words, verbs, what we emphasize in our stories and our reporting that could either protect us from those kinds of accusations or leave us open to them.
Judy, you look a little troubled.
Well, I think the media was cowed into submission shortly after the Barr letter was released because you saw headline after headline that said no collusion, no collusion. And that's not exactly what the Barr letter said. And careful reading of the phrases there indicated that that's not what he was saying, but those first stories, and those first stories are the stories that have impact. I think the press bent over backwards because they felt that they did get it wrong.
Well, no collusion is one element, but that isn't, of course, the only investigation.
Right. It didn't use the word collusion.
Right.
I mean, we'll have to wait and see what the real report says.
And I think Adam Schiff is making the point that there was collusion. That's what he is saying.
What I shared with my journalism class the other day was the newseum.org will have newspapers from around the country and the world can submit their front pages, their print pages, and you can go and see how a news item was handled on a particular day. So we looked on Monday the 25th's covers. And so, of course, for most of them, the no collusion was the main head.
Mm.
But the most reputable ones would also have a prominent subhead saying, but he was not exonerated. So you needed that combination.
One of the remarkable things that is a signal of what the impact of this news drop has been is that viewership of CNN and MSNBC in the primetime hours has dropped. Suddenly people are not tuning in with as much interest to Rachel Maddow or to Chris Cuomo.
So your hypothesis here, sorry to use that kind of professorial word, but your hypothesis here is that if the news is not agreeing with you, you don't watch. You don't want to see it if it isn't in agreement with your basic position. And the news was bad for many people who really want the president's scalp, and so therefore they're not going to watch it.
Yeah.
That's exactly true. The people that I know of who are really looking forward to this Mueller report as saving them from the Trump administration, what they did was they went for a hike, they went for a run, they did something with their grandchildren. It was really interesting that they did want to withdraw from the
news. Meditated.
They meditated.
Hmm. Well, it leads you to question if there is going to be further decline in the news industry as people move away from verifiable news and move toward just focusing on entertainment, which is a lot more pleasant after all.
Well, I don't know, Rex. It might well be that sooner or later, Barr, who is faced with a real uprising among the American people, look at the Marist poll, who want to see that report. They want to see the 300-page report. They want to see the footnotes. They want to see what was said. And if, as I suspect is going to happen, he's going to have to succumb to that. He's going to have to share a good deal of that thing. And if anything is in there, I think people will be back to the cable stations.
Yeah. Interesting.
But don't get your hopes up too much, America, because somebody's there with a black magic marker probably wiping out whole lines as they redact that thing.
Well, Judy, it's an unfolding story. So in other words, what happens is, you're right. They're going to redact like crazy. But then people will say, I wonder what this redaction is all about. And there'll be a push on that.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. Don't hesitate to share your thoughts. media@wamc.org to share your views with us. And we would take interest in your letter the same way we did our first writer here, Jermaine, whose letter Alan didn't like.
I just thought, Rex, it wasn't germane.
Ellen Chartok, Barbara Lombardo.
Judy Patrick. Yeah.
No, I was stumbling myself. Who am I? What am I doing here? And Rex Smith here. Happy to have you on the Media Project. By the way, there is a new poll from Pew Research Center. I look at Alan and cue him to give us the sound effects for all of this. People don't understand, by the way, that the news media is in financial trouble. Most Americans do not know about that. About 7 in 10 Americans think that local news outlets are doing at least somewhat well financially or very well financially. And when it comes to their own financial support of the industry, just 14% of American adults say they have paid for local news in the past year. Through a subscription donation or a membership. Isn't that interesting?
That's amazing.
What percentage of your listeners do you think actually are members?
Very low.
Isn't that amazing?
I mean, we know that we have 500,000 people tuning in to WAMC every month, and it ain't anything like 500,000 people who support the station.
Yeah, yeah. So that is troubling, and there are always there are different efforts. Google, for example, has this new effort. They are directly funding local news sites using a for-profit newspaper chain, McClatchy, as its publishing partner, but promising total editorial independence. It's kind of an amazing thing.
How does that work now?
Well, Google is actually going to be putting money into McClatchy and advancing McClatchy content on Google. Isn't that right? Am I stating this right?
Right, but I'm not particularly thrilled with it because there are thousands of locally owned independent newspapers that will not receive that largesse.
Exactly.
And you can't say no to those efforts, but that's not going to be the savior of the local news industry.
And one wonders about how much money counts, like here, as in every other undertaking in America. So, you know, you have a Washington Post being bought by the... And I happen to like what they do, but being bought by the richest guy in America, or in maybe the world. Now, obviously, we're told he doesn't call in the plays, but, you know, the people who are running the newspaper were hired for a reason, and they are anticipating maybe what the boss wants.
It could be, but you could say that of anybody who owns a newspaper. The only solution...
Yes, you could.
Or anybody who controls a newsroom. You know, even though this, for example, this not-for-profit model of public radio is admirable, I think, but you could have manipulation of the coverage here.
You don't?
Well, I hope not.
And if I tried as the head of the station, I can tell you right now, there would be hell to pay.
Well, and I can say the same thing for, you know, if a publisher of the LA Times or of the Washington Post tried to manipulate the news coverage, I think the newsroom would... There would be an uproar.
Well, you know, it's complicated. Not to get myself into more trouble than I've always been with the time.
Oh, boy.
Go ahead.
we'll let you know.
But, you know, when I say it's complicated, I think what happens is that, yeah, nobody comes down and says, okay, boys, this is the way, and girls, this is the way I want to run this newsroom, and this is what I want you to say in the paper today.
It's disturbing, though, that people want to, they want news, but they don't want to pay for it. And that 14% was very discouraging.
So the last word will have to be that from Barbara, Alan Chartok, Barbara Lombardo, and Judy Patrick. We thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
Mess meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments, she stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Kaylin Brown is chair of the Department of Communication at the College of St. Rose. Judy Patrick is the vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association. And Barbara Lombardo is a journalism professor at the University at Albany and former executive editor of the Saratogian and the Troy Record. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. when they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy's an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.